So in the book Pride and Prejudice, or the movie, if you know the movie, since the movie came from the book, I prefer the book, but the movie's good too. There's this character called Mr. Wickham. And if you know the story, in the beginning of the story, everyone loves Mr. Wickham. He's friendly, he's polite, he's good looking, and Lizzie likes him. And Lizzie's sort of the central character, female character in the book. And she's got this little crush on Mr. Wickham. But some point in the middle of the book, we learn more about Mr. Wickham, and we find out that Mr. Wickham is all show. And really, the guy's a scoundrel. And he looks good just because he's friendly and polite. And maybe you've seen Mr. Wickhams in your world. I was in the army. I once worked for a company commander who was that way. He was kind of like Mr. Wickham. He was all show, and so many people loved him. But because I was his executive officer, I saw him up close, and I got to see what he was really like. And he had no integrity whatsoever. But he sure looked good to a lot of people. And this is the real world. People like this exist. Scripture says Satan masquerades as an angel of light. So Satan looks good on the outside. And Jesus had to deal with such people. In fact, he had to deal with people even in his own midst that were like this. And so we're going to start in Matthew 26, starting with verse 14. And I'm just going to read through verse 25. It says, "Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, 'What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?' And they paid him 30 pieces of silver. And from that moment, he sought an opportunity to betray him. Now, on the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying, 'Where will you have us prepare for you to eat the Passover?' He said, 'Go into the city to a certain man and say to him, "The teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples."' And the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. When it was evening, he reclined at table with the 12. And as they were eating, he said, "Truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." And they were very sorrowful and began to say to him one after another, "Is it I, Lord?" He answered, "He who has dipped his hand in the dish with me will betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born." Judas, who would betray him, answered, "Is it I, Rabbi?" He said to him, "You have said so." Now, these verses that I read cover two different events. But what ties these two events together is the person of Judas. And these two stories did not happen in real time right next to one another. Judas had gone sometime in the past to the chief priests. But Matthew puts them together for topical reasons, not because of chronology. Obviously, Jesus going or Judas going to the chief priests did happen before the Passover meal, when Jesus identifies Judas. But we're on the first day of the week. So he comes to the chief priests earlier, and then on the first day of the week, and it's in verse 17, we've got the Passover meal. And Judas is central to both of those stories. That's what ties these stories together. And we learn that Judas is phony. So in verse 14, if you look at it, it says, "Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, 'What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?' And they give him 30 pieces of silver." And in verse 16, Judas then begins looking for an opportunity to betray Jesus. Now, if you remember, a couple weeks ago, we talked about this. The chief priests had met together to devise a plan to arrest Jesus and kill him. That's in verses 3 and 4 of this same chapter. You can go back and just kind of look at it. But so they want to kill Jesus. They want to arrest him. They want to kill him. But they say in verse 5, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. It's too many people during the feast. So in their plan, they're not going to do this during the Passover. But now, here comes one of Jesus' followers to them. And his offer changes the game. In their original plan, they weren't expecting one of Jesus' own followers to come over. But now they look at this. This could be our opportunity. This could change our plan. We may have to move quickly if this Judas fellow gives us an opportunity. And so you know that when they talked to Judas, it's not recorded in the conversation. All it says is, "What will you give me if I deliver him to you?" And they gave him 30 pieces of silver. That's all Matthew records. But you know there was more conversation than that when Judas and the chief priests met. And you know when they had that conversation that the chief priests probably said something like this: "Listen, Judas, no crowds. It must be quietly and privately." But you know what? Judas can arrange that. Judas is an insider. Judas knows Jesus' movements. And so, if, from the chief peace perspective, yeah, Judas, let's see what Judas can do for us. That's how they're approaching this. This is a possibility. This might work. And so we learn here that Judas, who's one of the 12, is really a betrayer. He looks good on the outside, but he isn't good. He's actually evil on the inside. This Judas, he's traveled with Jesus. He's listened to Jesus. He's watched Jesus heal the blind and feed the 5,000. He's seen Jesus cast out demons. He's seen Jesus walk on water. Judas was there for all of that. He was sent out by Jesus, and Judas has preached the gospel. Perhaps even cast out demons himself. I don't know. But it was all show. His heart was evil. Now, this is still true today. We've talked in the past, I think, about various, you know, issues in the church. You know, Ravi Zacharias, who preached the gospel, but had his private life of sexual abuse that as far as we can tell, there never was repentance of. Or all the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic and Baptist churches. And you've got men who look good on the outside, but there's evil there on the inside. And hear me with all of these. I'm not trying to pass judgment on every one of these men that are involved in all of these scandals, these men who have fallen. There is such a thing as repentance, and those men can be restored. They're not all Judases in that respect. Some of them are more like David, who repented. You know, David fell too, but David repented. But I'm sure there are some of those men who did those evil things, maybe many, who will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And yet, they look good on the outside. The Bible has its eyes wide open to this reality. You know, you can't have in the Bible a guy like Judas unless you are well aware that righteous men can have phony men in their midst. Because here's Judas in the midst of who else but Jesus. Jesus had a man like this in his midst. So what makes us think that we're going to avoid them? We're not. We're not going to avoid such people. And so the key isn't so much to avoid them, because that's not going to happen, but to be aware that they're there, that they're mixed with God's people, without getting cynical. That's the key. See, some people don't see this. They just think, oh yeah, he's in church, he must be a wonderful guy. They see everyone in a church as righteous and godly. That is called blindness. That's just blindness. Other people, they see the phony ones, and they can't see the godly people without reading phoniness into the godly people. They think that since there are phony people in the church, that everyone must be that way also. That's called slander. That's slander. That's evil, and it's sin. And so we have to be aware that there are Judases out there, but also aware that there are the other 11. See, in Jesus' followers, not everyone was a Judas. The other 11 are going to turn the world upside down. And yes, they're weak. They're broken. They have their failings. We're going to read about Peter denying Jesus later in this story. They're regular people. But they have faith. They may be weak, but they're real. That's the difference between the 11 and Judas. That's the church. And I want you to see the full reality of the church. The phony people who do not belong, and the broken, weak people who trust God in their brokenness. This is the church. And in the midst of all of these people is Jesus. And Jesus is in charge of what's going on. This is just kind of almost amazes me when I read about this, when we get to we're now getting to the beginning of moving to the cross. And one of the things that amazes me is that Jesus is in charge of this process of moving to the cross. Look what happens. So verse 17, it's Passover. Jesus arranges the Passover meal that night. The disciples say, "Where will you have us prepare the Passover?" He says, "Go into the city, go to this man, certain man, say to him, 'The teacher says my time is at hand. I'll keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.'" And so they do that. He's sort of directing the Passover meal that night. Verse 18, he says, Tell the man, my time is at hand. He's talking about his coming betrayal and death, which is going to begin that very night, on Passover night. Jesus is going to be betrayed during the Passover. You see it all through here. Verse 17, on the first day of unleavened bread, that is the Passover meal. That's the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which takes place on the Passover. The disciples say, where will you have us prepare for you to eat the Passover? Verse 18, I will keep the Passover at your house. He says, tell the certain man, I'll keep the Passover at your house. Verse 19, and the disciples prepared the Passover. And so this is the Passover meal. In verse 20, they're at the meal. And so think of, if you want an equivalent in our culture, think of Christmas Eve. It's something like that. This is the eve of the most important day of the year in their culture, which is the Passover. And they on that evening had the biggest, most significant meal of the year on that evening. And so here it is. We are on the eve of the most important day in Jewish culture. They're having the big meal that is the most significant meal of the year. And during the meal, Jesus says to everybody there, one of you will betray me. Now, just think what that does to the air. I mean, this is a celebration of the Passover. And he just comes out with it. One of you will betray me. That sort of puts a damper on the evening. And I want you to, for a moment, if you were Judas sitting there at the table and Jesus says this, one of you will betray me. You're Judas. You know who it is. You already went to the chief priests a few days ago for that very purpose. And so you know he's talking about you, even though he hasn't identified you. This has to be, I mean, this has to jar Judas. Judas thought his conversation with the chief priests was secret. And Jesus is letting him know, I know what you're about to do. But he doesn't identify Judas at first. He just says, one of you, one of the 12, one of you guys is going to betray me. And they're all sad and they're asking him, is it I, Lord? It's like they realize their weakness. I told you they're weak, frail, broken men. And they're beginning to realize some of that. Could it be me that's going to betray him? Sometimes we need that. We need to recognize our own weakness and acknowledge our propensity to sin, our potential to sin. You're not as strong as you think you are. I think that's partly why Jesus does this. He doesn't come out with Judas. He just identifies one of you. Because he's reminding them of this, in a sense. They're all wondering, could it be me? And Jesus then says, he who has dipped his hand in the dish with me, this is the one who will betray me. And I don't know that the idea is necessarily that Judas was dipping his hand, right there, although that could be what is going on. But the one, because all of them would have dipped their hand in the dish with him that night. The idea is it's someone close. It's a friend. It's on Passover, you have Passover with your family and your friends, and you're they have the common dish and you're just dipping the food in the dish. Everybody's doing it, the same dish, and you're just all together, and that's how it worked. This is painful. Jesus will be betrayed by someone close enough to be a friend. And he knows it. And he knows it in advance. And eventually he gets around to identifying him. After everybody says, "Is it I, Lord? Is it I?" You know, they're all kind of going around. And here's Judas sitting at the table. You know, everybody else asks. It'd be a bit awkward for Judas to not ask. He kind of has to ask too. And so he does. He says, "Is it I?" But Judas doesn't say, "Lord." He says, "Is it I, Rabbi?" Verse 25. It's as if, almost as if he can't acknowledge that Jesus is Lord. And Jesus says, "You have said so." "You have said so" is a Hebrew idiom that means yes. That's what it means in English, basically. It's just a figure of speech, the way they talked. But it means yes. We actually have a similar figure of speech in English. We say, "You said it." And when we say that, we're saying yes. It means the same thing. You know, "Boy, it sure is hot outside in July. You said it." We talk that way. It's actually the same idiom. And so Jesus just identified him. Now, what I want you to note in all of this is that Jesus is in charge of the entire evening, from setting up the Passover meal to bringing up the betrayal, identifying who the betrayer is, everything. He's letting his group know what's coming. In the book of John, Jesus actually then says to Jesus, Jesus is saying to Judas, "What you are about to do, do quickly." And Judas then leaves. And Judas doesn't participate in the rest of the meal. And so, guys, Jesus is directing his own betrayal. He's going to be betrayed, and he just directed it. Whatever it is that happens in life, I think there's a sense in which we need to see God is on the throne. He's still there. Nothing surprises God. When you sin, you didn't catch God off guard. It's not like God said, "Why would you do that?" When someone betrays you, understand that someone betrayed Jesus too. And he directed it. Are you better than Jesus? You know, you got sick. This is we go through this stuff in life, you know? You get sick. Your father dies. Your parents divorce. Your friend betrays your secret. You lost the job you always wanted. Someone beats you. Listen, Jesus went through this stuff. He went through pain and suffering, and he dealt with this. And he went through it willingly. Jesus did not have to go through any of this. He could have stayed in heaven and not come to earth and prevented all of this suffering that he's going through. But he's actually going through it, but more than that, he's actually directing it. But more than that, he's directing it ultimately for good. Look at verse 24. Jesus says, the Son of Man goes as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. When he says, the Son of Man goes as it is written of him, the idea is, this was foretold, and God is in this betrayal. There's a sense in which God is in this. But then he also says, woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. Now, if you are Judas, and you just heard that, to me, that's almost like despair. I mean, if you read that, you know, woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would be better for that man if he had not been born. If you read that and your heart doesn't weep, you don't know what Jesus just said. In some way, God is in Judas's betrayal. He says Jesus will die as it has been written of him. And Jesus is directing Judas even on the timing. But despite all of that, Judas is still responsible for his sin. Just because he's going as it was written doesn't mean Judas is off the hook. But God is going to use Judas's sin for good, ultimately. Judas is going to betray the most innocent man that ever lived. Judas is going to betray his own God, his own creator, his own judge, the man who will judge him one day. One day Judas is going to stand before Jesus, and Jesus will judge Judas. But God is going to take that evil and turn it on its head and use it to save the world. God is going to take a betrayal and a beating and a mocking and a violent, painful execution and turn it on its head to ransom all of mankind. God is going to take the suffering of the cross on himself. And he's going to do it willingly. In fact, he's going to direct it. He's going to direct all the people around him to bring about his own suffering so that he can then put sin to death. And the consequences of sin, he's going to bury them once for all. Jesus takes evil and makes good out of it. And this should encourage us. Because we suffer. We deal with evil. Now, I don't know all of what you all have been through in your lives, but you haven't been through anything like what Jesus has been through. You haven't had anything like that. And Jesus suffered willingly for you and for me. This is the central message, really, of Christianity. He suffered not to remove our pain on earth, but to remove the root cause of all pain and all shame and all separation from God, and to open the door to everlasting life. He takes the worst betrayal history's ever seen. I mean, when we think of famous betrayers, Judas is at the top of the list when we think of famous betrayers. And he takes the worst betrayal that history has seen, and he's going to do something wondrous with it. So, here's what I want you to do to close. I want you to, I'm just going to give you a minute. I want you to think of something from your life that was painful to you. And then I want you to think of something you've done that was sin. I'm not going to ask you to identify it. I just want you to think of those things. So take a moment.